Welcome to Mr. Sledge's neighborhood, where the property value is high despite Sledge attempts to build a water balloon trebuchet out of popsicle sticks. Each week, I probe the headlines for news, taste something that needs reviewing, and spit up some thoughts on the topic of the week. Fortunately, Sledge has helped paying for all of this with this week's sponsor, the Comfort Wipe.
For over 100 years, we've been scrunching and folding toilet paper.
Well, before toilet paper, we were wiping our ass with our own hands, so improvement.
Finally, there's a better way. Comfort Wipe, the sanitary paper extension arm and holder. The first improvement to toilet paper as we know it since the 1880s.
Just like the light bulb and the penny farthing bicycle.
It extends your reach a full 18 inches.
Ha ha, 18 inches.
While it follows the contours of your body and comfortably cleans.
Curved for your pleasure.
It's as easy to use as a shower brush. Just pop on the toilet tissue and when through, just press the release button and the tissue drops right into the toilet.
Along with your dignity.
Think about it. Toilet paper is really archaic and disgusting. The Comfort Wipe is a modern solution.
I'm not sure if modern or solution are the right adjectives.
That's right. Never touch another dirty toilet tissue.
Being a big guy certainly has its advantages.
That's what she said.
And its disadvantages.
That's not what she said.
This is a great product.
It's embarrassing to have someone help you with your personal matters.
The fuck kind of accent is that?
The Comfort Wipe allows you to maintain your dignity while you maintain your personal hygiene.
And not use a large, bulbous, long rod on your rectum for anything else.
Comfort Wipe, the sanitary paper extension arm and holder. The first improvement to toilet paper as we know it since the 1880s.
Now you're just repeating yourself.
It extends your reach a full 18 inches while it follows the contours of your body and comfortably cleans.
You know what else follows the contour of my body?
So if you or someone you love suffers from the loss of range of motion, or if you're someone who just doesn't want to touch dirty toilet paper.
What about the people that do want to touch dirty toilet paper? Have you thought about them?
Don't be embarrassed. Just get a Comfort Wipe. Order now and we'll send you the Comfort Wipe for just $19.99. Plus, we'll send you the Get a Grip.
Get a Grip. Stupid name.
Just pay separate shipping and handling. It's the assist handle that installs in seconds. Getting in and out of the tub has never been more comfortable.
But sometimes I like it a little rough.
You get it all. The Comfort Wipe and the Get a Grip. The entire $50 value for just $19.99. But you have to call now.
The Comfort Wipe. When you don't want to wipe your ass like a peasant, but you can't afford a bidet.
And now, the news!
In this sounds like a grown-up version of Clue News, WizKids Games is coming out with a new mystery card game this summer, and it sounds like a good way to spend a hot afternoon in an air-conditioned environment. Deadline is set in 1930s New York City, where players have to work together to solve a series of Pulp Fiction-inspired cases. Investigate diabolical crimes as a team of detectives and solve cases of deception, crime, and murder together. Every case has clues with symbols that must be matched to unlock their secrets. Players can get hot tips that will help them investigate, but watch out for plot twists that will complicate your investigation. Designed for 2 to 4 players, players must answer a series of questions about the case based on the clues that they have gained. The more you answer, the better the detectives you are. This game will retail for $44.99 when it comes out, which should be sometime in July. But, you know, sometimes these things get pushed back.
There's always Hoboken.
Yeah, but that's Hoboken. All I wanted was a Mega Slush. Just one Mega Slush, but you wouldn't let me have it, would you? You busted up my town and you tried to eat my robot. Now, you're going down!
In We All Saw This Coming news, Nintendo will be releasing an SNES Mini. Try to contain your shock. After the insanely successful NES Classic Edition completely sold out until Nintendo inexplicably stopped making it, the company is following up with a miniature version of the Super Nintendo that will come bundled with 21 classic 16-bit games, including Super Mario World and F-Zero. The SNES Classic Edition will include 2 controllers. Hey, they can learn! Super Nintendo Classic Edition will officially launch on September 29th and will be priced at $80, probably because it has the second controller. We've also got a complete new list of games for the tiny 16-bit console, and the lineup looks pretty solid. The games include Contra 3, Donkey Kong Country, Earthbound, Final Fantasy 3, F-Zero, Kirby Superstar, Kirby's Dream Course, Legend of Zelda, Link to the Past, Mega Man X, Secret of Mana, Star Fox, Star Fox 2, ooh, unreleased, Street Fighter 2 Turbo Hyper Fighting, Super Castlevania 4, Super Ghosts and Ghouls, Super Mario Kart, Super Mario RPG, Legend of the Seven Stars, Super Mario World, Super Metroid, Super Punch-Out, and Yoshi's Island. Retro gaming has been popular since laptops, tablets, and smartphones have become powerful enough to run emulators for classic consoles like the original SNES, Sega Master System, and their 16-bit counterparts. But finding the ROMs for your favorite childhood games required a lot of know-how and internet sleuthing. Most gamers don't have the patience for that anymore. Classic games from consoles like the Atari 2600 and the original Pong from arcade machines like Pac-Man have been available for easy plug-and-play consoles for close to a decade now. But those games all kind of suck. That was probably why SNES Classic Edition released last year was such a hit. Not only was it easy to use, it already came with a great lineup of A-list titles gamers actually wanted to play. As a result, this year's E3 included a bunch of NES Classic Edition clones, including a tiny Sega Genesis. This, of course, begs the question, when will Nintendo put any of these games on their virtual network for us to download a la carte? The answer is when customers aren't stupid enough to buy an overpriced hunk of plastic containing old games they will barely play. That's when Nintendo will stop. You idiots.
They're no use to us if we're dead.
And you're just gonna break them anyway.
No way! Listen up, you low-rent Mothra wannabe! You're going down, and you're going down extra hard! No one gets away with trying to mess up my robot! Let's get it on!
In bringing all the excitement of being trapped in a locked room with your friends to your mom's basement reviews, nothing brings together a group of people that normally wouldn't want anything to do with each other than mandatory workplace excursions. What was a quirky puzzle-solving group game made by friends has turned into a corporatized team-building exercise. Yes, I am of course talking about escape rooms, where the host of the event traps willing people until they can solve a number of increasingly difficult riddles or puzzles so that they can leave and pretend that they had all had fun getting to know each other and not just electing the brightest individual to solve all the problems for them so that they can go get a beer later without one of them. Now imagine this transformed into a board game. Now imagine every board game company trying to bank on this concept all at once. Seriously, everybody has their own spin on this. But I will focus on just one of those games. Escape Room, the game. Catchy title, isn't it? Two features of Escape Room, the game, sets it apart from the other Escape Room games. The game's boxy plastic, quote, chrono decoder, and the fact that the four different adventurers come in a single box. The chrono decoder, which the game bills as the ultimate console for your escape room experience, is an 8-inch long plastic box with various code-breaking tables on its sides. When you press the red start button, the box displays a 60-minute countdown timer. Four slots on the top of the box accept plastic keys, 16 of which are included in the game box. These keys are printed with different combinations of letters, shapes, edge designs, arrows, dots, Roman numerals, and numbers. And any of these items might be used in the game's puzzles to indicate the proper key insertion sequence. Each escape room features three of these key combos. Get one right and the machine will play a happy sound, and your party can advance to a new set of puzzles. Get the key combo wrong and the machine will buzz disapprovingly and subtract a minute from your total remaining time. Hints for each escape room the game scenario are written on cards, each marked with a time. Once the chrono decoder reaches that time, players are free to slide the hint into the included red plastic decoder and get some help. Because they are linked to time rather than to specific puzzles, as in some other escape room games, fast players may encounter a situation in which they blow through most of the puzzles only to get stuck near the game's end, at which point they may simply have to burn the clock before getting some help. That's not great game design, guys. The four escape room adventures included in the box are a fairly typical setting. A virus-infected lab, a prison, an Aztec temple, or a nuclear reactor that's about to go meltdown. Each one varies in difficulty, however, making this a good choice for those new to escape rooms or to family with members of many different ages. The prison break and via scenarios are rated 2 stars in difficulty, while the nuclear countdown is 3 stars, and the Temple of the Aztec is 4. Ooh. Should a scenario prove too difficult for you or your group, or too easy, the game offers other options within the box. The puzzles in these escape rooms are generally well constructed and varied. You'll fold, spindle, mutilate, crack codes, read codes, and even solve the occasional physical puzzle. The final puzzle in the Temple of the Aztec, the last and the hardest one in the box if you play the adventures in order, was baffling and unsatisfying even after a complete explanation. But that was kind of the outlier of the experience. So this game is a boxy plastic gadget that might seem like overkill for 4 adventurers, but publisher Spin Master Games has already released 2 expansion adventurers that can be purchased separately. Of course they can. The game's website also provides some printable bits to replace those used up while playing in an adventure, so you can get an additional use out of this by passing it to a friend or family member once complete. Yes, this is a legacy game, as in, once it's done, what's the point of playing it again? So, yeah, you're out $80, but you have the memories for, you know, the 4 hours that you played that game. Good times.
Ooh, steel cage match. Now we're talking.
Okay, Earther, let's see what you got left in that pathetic excuse for a robot.
Pathetic?
Oh man, he shouldn't have said that.
Okay, you big-headed tater-tot-looking freak. You trick me, you stack the odds against me, you threaten my friends, and you insult my robot. Now, I'm mad.
Wheel of Insanity, give me a topic I know something about, please? It says, talk about the future of indie games. Oh, okay, cool. Let's see where to start. Indie games as a concept has always been around, but it didn't become like the topic du jour of the gaming industry until this thing called Xbox Live Arcade was born. Before that, most people that made small-time games with small budgets didn't really expect to make a living off what was essentially their hobby. Then in 2005, Microsoft gave the world a platform that gave these developers an ability to make some money. In 2011, Microsoft was the indie king. The industry was just blossoming thanks to services like Steam and Xbox Live Arcade, which introduced independent games to huge, hungry audiences. Indie Games the Movie was about to debut, giving fans a deep behind-the-scenes look at the perils and triumphs of small-scale development. The Xbox 360 served as the foundational platform for the film's major projects, Super Meat Boy, Fez, and Braid. All fantastic games. And then, the pendulum swung. In 2012, Journey landed exclusively on the PlayStation 3. It served as a lightning rod for discussions about emotion and art in video games, and it gave Sony the momentum to transform its indie ecosystem. By July 2013, Sony had opened up its processes, allowing indie developers to self-publish their games on the company's next console, the PlayStation 4. Even Microsoft still required indies to partner with established publishers at that point. Microsoft attempted to regain its indie dominance with the ID at Xbox program, though that turned out to be more complicated than most developers would have liked. The launch of the Xbox One was a low-key disaster, while Sony continually dropped the mic, showcasing indie games at E3 to widespread acclaim, while Microsoft played catch-up. As recently as E3 2015, Sony's head hung heavy with indie jewels. Which brings us to today. Just 1 week after E3 2017, Sony's reign as indie king doesn't feel stable any longer. It showed 0 indie games during the E3 press conference, excluding some VR options, but who really cares about that? And developers on the show floor widespread about the company's increasing silence. Jim Ryan, Sony's Interactive's head in global marketing, said in an interview just days ago that indie games were, quote, less relevant now, end quote. Less what now, Jim? When it comes to indies, the air around Sony is thick. It feels like the pendulum is about to swing back, indie crown in tow. Sony's indie operations haven't halted entirely, of course, but they have changed in a tangible way. Two pivotal indie evangelists and Outstreet specialists, Adam Boyes and Nick Suter, left Sony in 2016. Boyes headed to Divekick studio Iron Galaxy, while Suttner landed at Oculus, as in Oculus Rift. Around the same time, Sean Layden's role grew. He transitioned from president and CEO of Sony Computer Entertainment of America to president of Sony Interactive Entertainment America and chairman of the SIE Worldwide Studios. Layden has hosted the past two PlayStation E3 press conferences, both of which were short on indies by recent standards. A few years back, Sony felt like it an unapproachable space with people that were excited for indie games, and it seemed that Microsoft was simply going through the motions. This was like that back in 2013 and 2014, but today, many developers say they don't see much difference between Microsoft and Sony. Microsoft is ramping up its indie outreach efforts, sending folks to Indiecade booth at E3 and making deals with new developers and lining up a few high-profile launch exclusives, including Ori and the Will of the Wisp, which I am super excited about, Tacoma, Cuphead, and The Last Night. Meanwhile, Sony is pulling back. This puts both companies solidly in the middle of the road. Microsoft and Sony aren't the only two players in the indie world, however. Nintendo is ramping up its own outreach efforts. They have opened up with their new Switch portal, and new companies like Raw Fury, Finji, and even Iron Galaxy are diving into indie publishing with Grassroots Angle. These are independent developers who found their audience, saw success, and are now helping generate newcomers to get started. What has changed over the years is that developers and publishers are getting better at signing deals. Independent developers are generally not legal experts or communication majors. They don't even want to accidentally sign their rights away or waste time haggling over contractual details. Paperwork was, and perhaps still is, one of Microsoft's biggest hurdles as it tried to snap up independent developers at the height of Sony's indie reign. Indie games are their own genre, and the market is shifting to accommodate more experiences, more developers, and more publishing opportunities. The community itself is also established, allowing veteran developers to support newcomers, offering advice on publishing, marketing, and yes, paperwork, so deals don't get hurt the dev so much. Microsoft may be making moves in the indie space, but many developers are bypassing their big names altogether, choosing to exist in a kind of Steam-filled limbo. Like what I did there? If this were Sony of years past, we would have seen more indies represented at E3. It would have been a chance for Sony to show that it's still on the same page as its audience. The same audience that devoured every advertisement, trailer debut, late-night talk show appearance, and pre-order bonus for No Man's Sky, an indie title that premiered at the 2013 VGX Awards show, was featured in a huge way on Sony's stage for two consecutive E3 conferences, and probably became one of the most infamous games of the current generation. Infamous, but still furiously popular, for some reason. Attention on any indie title would have bolstered its E3 press conference and helped cement its reputation as a creative, supportive community for independent developers, a reputation it seemed to relish in building over the past few years. Instead, Sony didn't bring a single developer on stage, and its show centered on big-name AAA experiences and VR, again, for some reason. Of course, this isn't 2014 anymore. Selling indie games becomes more difficult every day, as the market is saturated with new experiences. The folks at Sony might be onto something here. Let the indie industry curate itself and form its own publishing ecosystem, and then work with these companies in a more traditional third-party structure. More traditional, perhaps, but less independent. And that doesn't bode well for creativity.
Look at what you've done to the Zords. Insult to injury.
That's just mean. I knew you were bad.
Listen, chump. I was just doing my own thing when some robot-riding circus freaks jumped me. And then you had to show up and start bashing my town. And for some reason, everyone keeps calling me the bad guy. I may not be the best guy, but I sure ain't no bad guy. Yo, S-Force, you ready?
No! No!
My robot!
Thanks for putting up with me this week, listeners, and be sure to pick up your tickets for the Grand Rapids Comic Con, where I and the rest of the Court Nerds will be hanging out, moderating panels, and trying to see how many hot wings Drew can eat before John has to cut them off. I'm not sure the over and under, but I'm sure we can bet on it like we do for Rotten Tomatoes scores. I'm Kevin from the Court of Nerds asking, Joey, have you ever been to a Turkish prison?